I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Cheryl Lentz. Cheryl is the publisher of The Refractive Thinker. She is an author on leadership as well as critical and refractive thinking. Cheryl is a university professor, a speaker, and a consultant, and she teaches the RIST method, which is an acronym about critical thinking, to enable you to fail faster and reach success sooner. Cheryl, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Terrific, David. Happy to be here. Thank you.
So, Cheryl, we had an inspiring chat on your radio show, The Refractive Thinker, where I had the honor of being the first guest of 2015. So thank you for having me on as a guest. And I'm also grateful to our prior guest, Lisa Gibson, for connecting you and me. And I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about your background, because you've done so many different kinds of things in your life. I think it's remarkable. And in particular, I want to hear a little bit about the breadth of things you've done, but how you ended up getting into this fascinating niche of thinking and leadership.
Oh, that's an easy one in there. I started as a college professor 15 years ago this month, actually, in this year. It's been an interesting adventure, one that I never thought I'd be a college professor, believe it or not. But it was one that was very fascinating because I would have many students come into my classroom who are in their second phase of their lives, meaning many of them are coming back because they're seeking promotion, they're seeking to finish their degrees, as opposed to many of the students who go directly from, say, high school to college. And I was seeing a lot of trends when I was in the classroom, particularly regarding fear. And I used more of a gaming type of platform, particularly for critical thinking, where we'd look at brain teasers, we'd look at word problems, we'd look at funny stories and rhythms, because I needed to connect with them to get their attention so that we just didn't have that apathy and that fear. Because many times they would take these games home and play with their kids, and their kids could do them instantly. Why? Because kids don't yet know fear. We learn fear, and that is something that often stifles us. So I often found that the critical thinking explanation that I taught in the classroom was incomplete, because often we look at thinking as inside the box, critical thinking is outside the box. And to me, that wasn't enough. It's like it needed the third leg of the school, which is where refractive thinking, which is much more in the vein of Einstein and Da Vinci and Socrates, and the what lies beyond the box, and what if it isn't a box yet, or if it's a box at all? And so looking at asking some of these questions was really as a result of the live laboratory with my students, particularly adults, you know, in their 30s and 40s going back to school to be able to get their credentials for promotion and to see how they struggled. It was just heartbreaking. And so I was looking for different techniques to help them move forward faster and with a lot more fun and a lot less fear and trepidation.
Fear can be a big impediment.
Oh, yes.
So tell me, what is refractive thinking? How do you define it?
Refractive thinking has quite a few things. Think of it as boundaryless thinking, limitless thinking. Instead of just asking why, we would ask why not. Thinking of being able to go beyond the idea of what's possible. Because when many people think of that box, it really gets frustrating because they think even when you're thinking outside the box, you're still thinking with parameters. And I am completely boundaryless, limitless, possibility thinking. This idea of let's not look at conventional types of wisdom. Let's look at what might be possible. Because particularly in this digital age we live in, David, there's so much that is now coming to the forefront because we now have a lot of things that weren't available to us years ago. And so that's really what we're looking for, is I don't want any attachment to the past. I really want that innovative refraction, much like eyes will look at light through refraction when it comes back through various colors and prisms. That's really the concept here, is what happens when you look at things at new and limitless ways and the solutions that come that you wouldn't have thought about, because we now have to ask the right questions, and the right questions are beyond those boundaries.
What's an example of refractive thinking?
Think of the idea, it really came when I was reading Einstein's bio. Einstein has this idea when he was thinking in theoretical physics. Theoretical physics, particularly during Einstein's time, was the things that we were thinking about that we couldn't yet prove. And so he was looking at the idea of the moonbeam and what it would be interesting in that theory of relativity. of being able to, and he was just thinking in terms of stories and pictures. And so when we think of refractive thinking, Einstein's a perfect example, because initially it was merely thought that started his idea of the theory of relativity and riding in a moonbeam and seeing when you're on a moonbeam, could you see someone else riding in the same moonbeam, and are you in the same time and space? And it's really fascinating, and you don't really have to understand physics to understand the idea of, wow, what else is there? I'm also liking to, when you're looking at trying to understand the language of the universe, I mean, again, we go back to Einstein and Leonardo da Vinci, when the laws of gravity and the laws of physics, they weren't clearly defined yet. So we had these masterful thinkers who were trying to discern Mother Nature's language, and that language was science. And through trial and error, and Einstein took over 10 years with his theory of relativity and thinking before technology and ideas during that time frame could actually be considered, because it was heresy back then, much the way Christopher Columbus when the world was flat, is you have to get to both a time and space and a culture where you can start thinking of what else is there and what does this mean, because a lot of the things we've now believe as truth aren't. If you look at just recently the 9 planets we used to have, Pluto didn't just fall from the sky. It was the learning from Voyager that took 20 years to come back to be able to tell the scientists, you know, we didn't quite get it right. So now we've adjusted our thinking. And all a theory is, this is what we need, this is what we know today until proven otherwise. Well, then proven otherwise is really where refractive thinking comes in, to have the courage to be willing to fail and to ask the questions that we could be wrong. And that's okay, because knowledge in any form, right or wrong, still moves us forward. So that's really the premise.
Mm-hmm. And how can we apply refractive thinking to business?
Oh, that is amazing. I spend a lot of time with my students when they ask questions regarding the success of business. How do we know what success is? And a lot of folks will look at key performance indicators, but they're trying to put things that are changing into old constructs. And that's the idea that I love Peter Senge. You can't put new ideas into old ways of thinking about them, or old constructs is the academic term. So when we think about refractive thinking, we want to be able to turn our heads, look at things differently, look at it from a 30,000 foot view, a 60,000 foot view, look at it from a variety of different angles. Sometimes that's where that risk method comes in. Sometimes we just have to look at things differently, where we change our space. I guarantee you, we think differently when you look at it from different angles. For example, if you're sitting in a chair versus standing on a table versus looking outside, it's amazing where inspiration can strike, but we can't think of being inspired and innovative and creative if we're only looking at the same four walls. So when I need to get inspired, sometimes I'll go for a walk, sometimes I'll go outside, sometimes I'll have people get out of their business box. You know, business doesn't just happen in the academics or the, you know, the business space with the, you know, the conference table and the high leather chairs. Most business happens, you know, maybe poolside, maybe on the golf course, maybe simply talking at happy hour. So we have to change what we think business looks like. And when we change that and we change the space, we often change the ideas around that space. And that's what changes our ideas in that space, particularly around business. It's pretty fascinating that all we have to do is just change how we see the world, and we'll see it much differently.
It is pretty fascinating, and I think a lot of the paradigms that we have used in business for a long time have shifted quite a bit over the last few years, thanks to the internet and changes in the economy and the marketplace.
Absolutely. I try and experiment with many of my in-person students, and I'll ask them when I'm in residence, is just close your eyes and think of what the first thing is, what you think business looks like. And I make it instantaneously. I don't want them spending a lot of analysis. I just want the first thing that happens in their head. And it's amazing how many of them have these traditional, well, business isn't a three-piece suit. Business is going into the office. Business is sitting at a round conference table with mahogany backgrounds and leather-backed chairs. And then I offer them some ideas, because I lived in Las Vegas, Nevada for a long time. And you can imagine a lot of business takes place on the Las Vegas Strip. It takes place in restaurants and in bars and on the golf course and in theater events, and they're in very non-traditional places, yet they still, my students in that environment still thought business was that, well, you have to go someplace. I'm like, you and I are talking via computers in there. I spend 90% of my time at home with talking to students around the world via my computer. Business is looking vastly different, and sometimes it takes a little while for that perception to catch up.
So, Cheryl, what's been your experience with individuals in business who are trying to get their ideas in front of the people who would benefit from learning about them. What do you see as some of the challenges to try to transmit those ideas and get them to catch on?
Part of that is trying to figure out what your audience is. Many ideas come from the fact that we think it's a great idea. We as the entrepreneur, we as the business creator, the conceptualizer. But we have to think in terms of marketing. And marketing really has two features. Either you create a need or you serve a need. If you're creating a need, that's so much harder than fixing or having your business as a solution to a problem that already exists. And that's what's amazing about this podcast that you have, is because part of your focus is actually making that connection of what problems do you solve that others have that you make their life easier. And so if we look at that idea from a business owner, it becomes less about selling it. It becomes more about listening. And more about brokering the deals. What I tell my students when I look at things is, I'm here to be able to connect a problem person with a problem solver and a solution. So if someone has a problem with fixing their car and you know a mechanic that has a solution, you broker the deal, you put them together, and now you've made a match, a matchmaker essentially. And so when business owners, you know, many of them conceive of that fabulous idea, the idea is, well, who else shares your passion? Who are else people that have that same problem that you want to solve for them? That's the easiest way. When you have to develop something that's brand new for a problem they don't even know they have yet, which is a lot of what technology is doing for us now, then that becomes a little bit more of an educational process first and a marketing brokering the deal second, where we first have to teach them what's possible, then we teach them what problem it solves that they didn't even know they had. So again, you're dealing with two different components that you really have to fish where the fish are, and the easiest first when you begin your company is to really show them, where is that problem that you solve? What is the solution that you're the one that came up with that can make everyone's ideas? And you're like, oh, isn't that amazing? And that's really the idea that really helps things catch on, is when you don't have to sell it and convince them and persuade them, you're simply already coming up with fixing something they already have, and you're making their life easier. Now it takes a life on its own, because all they're going to do is say, well, gee, did you hear about that new thing that David did? And he's got this new widget, and oh my gosh, it's fantastic. Word of mouth is so powerful, particularly in social media, to really put business stuff, products and services, simply in problem-solving terms. This is the problem I fix, and since you have that problem, how can I help? And it becomes a whole lot more simple than trying to convince others of a problem they may not yet know they have. So I think it's a bit of a continuum. But it is that relationship, and all you're doing is showing them what you solve to help them make their lives easier.
So Cheryl, what's the connection between listening and finding solutions to problems that you know exist and refractive thinking?
The idea of listening is very difficult when you think of being able to have bias. When we think we're listening, we think, particularly if we're a business owner, we're listening for specific agenda items. I know, for example, as an editor, I tend to listen to finding keywords that put editing in my forum. But the fact is that sometimes not all of our customers are for our customers. And so it may not be an editing problem that they have. So I have to really tune in my ears, again, refractive thinking, why not? What if? I had a client today that I spoke with that it took us nearly 20 minutes just to get the heart of what exactly she needed from me, because she couldn't quite articulate. She knew she was frustrated. She knew she was mad. She knew she was upset. And it had something to do with school. But it, for me, it was helping to direct and guide her to ask questions so that she knew I was listening, and to help her direct really into that area for which I might have a solution, or I might be able to direct her to others who might have a solution for her. Because I don't solve everyone's problems in there. I can solve perhaps a piece. But we have to really listen to be able to know, are we serving the needs they have, and are we answering the question they've asked? Because I often have students who write brilliant papers, but they don't write the paper that I ask them to. They don't solve the problem that I've had. So that listening, that reading directions, that really honing in on what your clients really have to say will really help your business go forward. Because now they know, going, oh, isn't this amazing? Mary had something that she told me in a conversation, and she said, but Doc C, you get it. You get me. You understand, and you're able to put words to something that I have been struggling with. And again, that refractive thinker, remember, sometimes it's not a box. Sometimes it's just a blob and a shape. And we have to be able to look at those critical thinking analysis, Socratic questioning, to be able to keep asking why. And when we stop asking why and we've hit pay dirt, they're like, that's it, eureka, I got it. Now we know that we've actually made that connection, so that we know that we are absolutely looking at a solution as opposed to simply peeling that onion of a symptom. Because, you know, if you keep having the same problem over and over, that means you haven't solved the cause yet. You've only continue to keep solving the symptom. And so that's how we know from a refractive thinking standpoint that we can look at that and know that we're really making purposes, because we're not just asking why, but we're asking what if and why not.
Well, this is a slightly different kind of why, but I know that Simon Sinek talks about understanding your why, which is really your purpose of doing what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Which is so important to being able to create a successful organization and to be successful in business. It's you really do have to go as deep as possible to understand the reason that you're doing something. And that also will help you to solve problems in a way that is on a deep level and not just dealing with a symptom that might be a short-term fix.
Absolutely. I think you really keyed in on something, and there is this concept of time, David, is many of my students and business consulting and things that I do is that idea of thinking in the short term. They're thinking for today. They're thinking tomorrow, maybe the next week, maybe the next month ahead. But that time element shifts the idea of questioning when you look at it from a longer term. What is going to happen in a week, a year, 10 years, 20 years? These types of shifting in time are really what can shift a lot of questions for what we call an outcome-based approach. A lot of different people may have an input, but if we think of it only myopically, only in our world, only around our space in our time, which is today, yesterday, next week, next month, it might not be long enough. And so when we shift that time element, like you said, the short term, what if we thought a little longer term, maybe midterm, maybe it's 3 months, a quarter, a year? As you expand this universe, so to speak, answers change a little bit, paradigms shift just a little bit. And so I think you really hit on something, is that idea of why, but why changes a little bit over time, and whether it's our why or many people's why. Because again, if we think of ourselves as concentric circles where we're at the center, well, as we shift out to what we think is a good idea, well, do others agree? And when we keep shifting out, and then eventually in business, that becomes our customers, our vendors, our suppliers, and all of the other folks that are on there, everybody has a little different shift. And we as the leader at the center of that circle have to be able to look at that why and to be able to say, I wonder how these all connect in the short term, in the midterm, in the long term. So you're genius, my friend. That time factor is very important when you're asking questions.
Well, also it's a constant battle, because although we might want to try to solve what's important, which generally is a longer term issue, the short term and the urgent seems to always take priority.
Absolutely. My students and I call the difference between reactive thinking and proactive thinking. Are you a fireman? And I know most of my students tend to feel like that all they do all day long is just go from one fire or one crisis to another with their fire hose and their fire truck. And where they struggle is when things are happening so quickly and so chaotically and so fast and furiously that they often don't have the time to think. And so I love this great concept that John Maxwell has, and he calls it the thinking chair, where you actually spend time in your week to actually, whether it's a physical place, some people like go to church, some people have a park bench, some people like to be out, but it's a specific space where you actually sit and you schedule time to think, to get away from the chaos and putting out fires and to actually think about what would I want to do instead of what do I have to do. The difference between solving and putting out the fire today so the building doesn't burn down to thinking about how we want to manage and plan for the future. And that really does require setting a time, space and time to actually just think. I'm a big fan of journaling, and I have lists of things to think about later when I have time to think. Because I do sometimes spend those days where the phone never stops ringing and the problems never stop coming and you're, again, reaction mode, firefighter mode. But then you have to take the time to take a step back and go to that special place, that thinking chair, where you're like, well, gee, I wonder why that happened. And see if we can't be more proactive instead of reactive, to take the time to go through these whys and to make sure, did we ask the right questions? Did we ask them in the right sequence? Are we really getting to the heart, or are we again still back to that peeling the layers of an onion? So it is really important that at some point in our day or week that we do set aside some time just to think. Your brain is always working, whether we know it or not. I mean, we're the active part wherever your day is from 6 in the morning till 9 o'clock at night, say. But even when you're sleeping, the brain's constantly working and problem solving. And so I like to give my brain things to work on. Now, we all know that a watch pot never boils. And sometimes that if you spend too much time problem solving and say you spend every Wednesday morning at 9 o'clock and that's your thinking time. But sometimes things don't come during your thinking time. And so I have learned to look at intuitive and ensure, you know, in an inspired thought that sometimes when I'm making, you know, dinner, I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's it. Because I've always had that thinking going on in the background. You begin it, you get the process rolling, and then you kind of let your mind kind of do its thing. And eventually I get answers for all kinds of things that I'm thinking about. You have to kind of know your rhythms and know what works for you. And when you've hit your limit that it's, all right, time's up. Let's kind of table this and let your brain still working on it, and when to recognize when solutions come, because I always keep a pen and paper handy because I never know when it's going to come, and I never want it to leak out my ears that I'll forget about it if I don't write it down fast enough.
So Cheryl, at times when you've been stuck, who has helped you smash the plateau?
Been quite a few of my business coaches. I have learned in time that we are not an island and I cannot do things on my own. I have learned starting actually in January of 2011 that I actually started with my first business coaches. And I usually have anywhere between 1 to 3 different business coaches. I've worked with Sabrina Gibson. I've worked with Tom Antion. I have worked with several of my doctoral mentors who are still in the picture. Dr. Elmer in there. I'm currently working with the folks at Laurel Langmire right now. But I realize the fact that there's always somebody who knows more than me. And it gets to the point that when my business reaches that plateau, that's why I love your show, because we do get into that business cycle. The things are just humming along, but it's hard to get breakthrough to the next step. And so if I can't see the forest for the trees, I realize that 2 heads are better than 1, sometimes 10 heads are better than 1, that I will go to my circle of influence. I will go to my business coaches. Matter of fact, I have a business coaching session in the morning because I have some very specific questions that I keep knocking my head against the wall and I can't quite come up to a solution. So I'm thinking, you know what? Someone else has to know this. And so I read a great deal. I go to my business coaches and I realize that it can be somewhat humbling that I need to ask for help. And that has been the hardest thing of knowing that I don't have all the answers, but I know how to find people who do. And I have the wisdom to recognize when those times come that I need help. And so smashing the plateau is really getting help when you need it and seeing getting help as a sign of strength, not a sign of weakness. And that's really important.
That is very important. And you're right. None of us is an island. So getting help is really important. Cheryl, what are you working on now that you're really excited about?
I am adjusting some things with regard to my editing business that I currently have, because as a publisher that we publish several award-winning series a year, and I do a lot of editing, and I just love the editing aspect of it. So I just published an editing book actually on Tuesday, and it's very, very basic. It takes a lot of the videos that I've done and the blog posts I've had and puts it in a specific place, because a lot of my editing clients have suggested that I have a really unique way of editing and I have a very unique way of being able to help them break their own plateaus. So I'm going to be moving into more of a coaching. Instead of just being given a dissertation to edit or a book to edit, I'm going to be doing far more group coaching for my clients to help them talk through the process of this. Because a lot of folks are like, Cheryl, I want to be able to learn how to do this for myself as opposed to just having you do it for me. And so now we're into a follow your own advice, Dr. C, is teach Amanda Fish rather than give Amanda Fish. So now I'm changing my editing business to add that element of coaching to help through that. And I'm really excited so that I can help others smash their own editing plateau and to help them master some of these skills themselves.
That is really exciting. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it. Cheryl, what is one of your influencers, somebody who's been a thinker or a resource that has really been pivotal in your career?
I remember the day that I met Peter Senge. He is an amazing writer. The Fifth Discipline, The Dance of Change, his field book manual all speak to me in there because of this concept of systems thinking. And this was probably more than almost 15 years now that I met this author through one of my academic teachers that said, read this book, and it really changed my life. And part of that is because of this idea of creating systems for everything we do. Another way to say it is creating a habit. So for my students, it's a, if your writing isn't getting easier, that tells me there's something wrong with your writing system. If your studying isn't getting any easier, there's something wrong with your studying system. If your thinking isn't getting any easier, there's something wrong with your thinking system. So I'm looking at this idea of being able to put these ideas so that I have a very efficient system, ways of doing things, where it doesn't matter the what, I can just kind of, like Tinker Toys, that's going to show my age a little bit here, but you're replacing different parts where the what becomes really immaterial. It's the how that we hone, and that how is critical in refractive thinking skills. So I am really excited that I met Peter Senge. I go back and read his books quite a bit because of that systems thinking mentality. I'm also a big fan of Einstein, as you and I have talked as well.
Yeah. They were both really breakthrough thinkers.
Absolutely. And they didn't allow fear to stop them. Because I remember some of the things, because everyone looks at Einstein in particular as that eccentric, you know, guy with the crazy hair and the mismatched socks and the pipe in there. But part of that is he's one of the few who never lost that childlike thinking. He really didn't care what people thought of his quirks in there, because his quirks were part of where he would spend hours thinking. I mean, just taking a walk in the park with his pot, and it didn't matter if his hair was unkempt. It didn't matter if his socks didn't match. It was the matter that he had that childlike four-year-old go back to asking why. And many people just didn't quite grasp that. They thought he was nuts, and I'm like, if that's the kind of nuts, I'm right there with him, because I'm actually wearing mismatched socks intentionally because I like that quirkiness. I like the fact that things aren't always ordered and they're a little bit chaotic, because that's where some of my inspiration comes. When you look at things differently and you're willing to take that risk, sometimes it's the risk of being silly. Sometimes it's the risk of being the only one in the room that stands up to have your idea, and you're like, well, what if we did this? And it's taking a risk, but sometimes those questions come back to being the silliest person in the room. And I love Einstein's ability to say, I don't care what people think. Let's just go and have a good time with it and look at the solutions to the universe that man found. It's just so inspiring.
Look at the gifts the world has received as a result.
Oh, absolutely. And it keeps giving because of the people who will follow in their footsteps. And that's where I like Ralph Waldo Emerson. One of his great quotes is, you can either go ahead and, you know, blaze a trail or follow in other footsteps. And sometimes I need to know when to lead, and sometimes I need to know when to follow, because there are amazing things that we all add our gifts to the universe, but we're basing it on the brilliance that has come before us and the brilliance that will come after us. Know that we're just simply part of the universal process, and I think that's the most exciting part of all. We get to play with all of these wonderful masters from so long ago.
And we're all interconnected, and it really,
absolutely,
regardless of time and space.
Absolutely. That's why I try to take the pressure off of my students, going, you know what, you don't have to come up with the answers all by yourself, and you don't have to invent a wheel that's already been invented 1,000 times over. All we have to do is let's look to those geniuses, let's look to the masters, let's look to Socrates and Plato and the current folks that are, you know, the Mother Teresa's, the thought leaders of today with John Maxwell and Jack Welch. And we don't have to think that it's all on our shoulders. And when I tell them that, it's like I've lifted that entire weight, going, you mean we don't have to do it alone? It's like, no. The good news is we get to play and build upon all of these other thinkers and then add our little twist. And my little twist to the universe is refractive thinking, because it's just a different way of looking at it. And people are like, wow, that's different than creative thinking. It's different than thinking and critical thinking. And it's just the unique way that Dr. C looks at the world. And so if it can help someone else, they're going to think of something based on the synergy of what I've offered them. And down the road, they'll go taking it farther than I ever thought possible. And that's how we have to look at the universe, is what are we contribute that someone else is going to build on our ideas going forward, and we all benefit. And I think that's a fabulous way to look at it.
So speaking of other people, Cheryl, whom do you know personally who's doing really remarkable work?
Oh my gosh, there are so many right now in there. I've got a good colleague of mine with the Synergy Institute in San Diego who is doing some remarkable things with veterans and looking at the idea of, her and I do a lot of technology. that we're getting back into, you know, when I'm a former military spouse and I teach a lot of military folks, and I want to be able to help them get back into mainstream lifestyle. And when we connect and can see some of the gifts we have, because I go around the country teaching about emerging technologies. And while my business coaches have shown me emerging technologies with the blog and the video and Twitter and things like that, I have taken them from the business world and drawn them into academia. And now when we look at academia through Julie doing her work in San Diego, it's amazing because now we can adapt all of these things that, for whatever reason, you and I have talked about this, is they silo people. It's like, well, we do this in accounting, and we do this in business, and we do this here. But when we look at this idea of being able to pull different things from different worlds, well, why can't we take business and put it into academia? And why can't we take academia and put it into business? And looking at these remarkable synergies, that's why I love the name of her company, to be able to find unique solutions and unique adaptations and applications of what we already know. And so that's what we're doing, a lot of things, because I know I use Facebook in my classes, I use Twitter, I teach on a variety of platforms. Makes my administrators a little nervous, David, but when we look at this, it really expands the mind of a lot of the folks. So we're doing a lot of research in this area, and I love the fact that it helps with military veterans. It just warms my heart. So
no, that's a great example. Cheryl, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
Oh, I have a variety of ways in there. I have my personal website, just drcheryllentz.com, and that's Cheryl with a C. And that's kind of my online living resume, if you will. But if you search for me online in Google, you'll find that I have many different websites. I have YouTube, which has a channel of, if you're a student, if you're in academia and you need a fun way to learn, I've got a YouTube channel. It's got 54,000 views. It has over 100 teaching videos. Because I know a lot of my students, they won't read a syllabus, but they'll watch something. So you can find me on YouTube. You can find me on Facebook. I'm in Twitter. I'm in LinkedIn. I have several of my books that I have published you can find on Amazon. So there's an awful lot that is out there, and I'd love to have them connect with it. And if all else fails, drcheryllentz@gmail.com. Come email me. Come play with me. I'd love to chat with you.
Terrific. Terrific. Cheryl, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau. My guest today has been Dr. Cheryl Lentz, publisher of The Refractive Thinker. Thank you again, Cheryl, for joining us.
My pleasure and honor. It's been wonderful. I hope what we've had helps your listeners in some way.
Thank you. You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.